Governor Cox and the legislature need to have a talk.
I think there are way too many bills, and I'm going to be very vocal on that, and I will be a lot more vocal over the next year. This keeps happening, and we're setting records almost every year.
Let's do the numbers. In just a wee 45 days, lawmakers proposed 962 bills and resolutions and passed more than half, a cool 582.
If we covered every piece of legislation, we'd have churned hundreds of stories. Each. This week on State Street, we've got to ask, how normal is all of this? So much legislation, and they didn't even break a record.
That was last year, when they passed 591 bills, 9 more than this year. Underachievers. And likely would have been more if the branches of government weren't having a little bit of a family feud. I'm Sage Miller.
And I'm Sean Higgins. If you thought this session felt a little tense, you aren't imagining things. The legislature, and heck, all three branches of government, seem to be going through something right now. Everyone is jockeying for power, both subtly and not so subtly.
So we had a political scientist give us the tea on Utah's governing system.
Plus, we of course will be recapping what went down. We'll take you through some of the biggest bills we talked about this season and where they landed. This year's session simply felt like it moved a lot slower. Maybe that was just because the last few years have been so breakneck ever since COVID, but it got us thinking, are the House and the Senate okay?
Great question. We started to see these little snapshots that trouble might be brewing behind the scenes. The slow pace is one thing, but the last day really brought it into focus. Carrie Ann Lisenby, the House Majority Whip, was MIA on the floor. Like, where was she? We heard from lawmakers she was hustling to get the Senate to prioritize anything the House wanted. Since a lot of that was behind the scenes, we can't really show how successful she was. But based on the look on her face, I wouldn't say very. And Speaker of the House Mike Schultz hinted at this in his final remarks.
All right, representatives, we did it. The last 45-day sprint, and certainly the last couple hours sprint, was not easy. Probably a little bit more hectic than I've ever seen, to be honest with you.
I do have to say, I've never seen legislators move on the floor the way they did on that last day. They were running, like actually running around, trying to pass bills. I'll give you just a glimpse of the frantic nature of things. Let me take you to the final seconds of the session, 11:59 p.m., when Representative Anthony Lubbe tried to pass a bill at the literal last minute.
Motion to uncircle SB 124.
Thank you, Representative. That motion is urgent. Speak to it. No, go ahead and place the motion. All in favor, motion is House uncircle for substitute SB 124. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Rule that motion passes. Bill's uncircled. Representative Lubbe.
Yes, this continues a pilot program of electric-powered lawn equipment and found it to be very successful. So we're just going to be continuing it, and it started back in 2021. Thank you.
Discussion to the bill. Seeing none. Back. Voting summation. Oh, shoot.
And that was how the 2025 Utah legislative session ended. Sorry, lawnmower bill. Better luck next year.
The House was trucking, but they kept hitting roadblock after roadblock after roadblock in the Senate.
And that inconvenient thing called time.
And that was the theme throughout the session. Like when I asked Speaker Schultz about some vote-by-mail changes, and there was clearly some miscommunication.
The way I remember that bill ending up is you still have to have the signature on it, and that they still can look if there's questions.
There's nothing in the bill that says that a signature will be added past 2029.
Damn Senate. That's not my vote, so.
I got the lowdown on these political dynamics and what might be going on underneath the surface from Damon Kahn. He's the head of the politics department at Utah State University and has been watching this session pretty closely. how would you describe the vibe of this session?
Well, this session's been unique in a number of ways. In recent sessions, we've seen a lot of noise just crashing right out of the gate and legislation passed very quickly, very early on. This session, it's taken a little longer to resolve some of the big issues hanging out there. You know, in some ways that can be good. It means that there can be more deliberation, more time for discussion and consideration. On the flip side, when pressure starts to set in to get things done at the last minute, then that is itself is not always conducive to the best outcomes a legislative process can offer.
Something that is very real in the legislature this year is contention between the two chambers themselves. What is the impact if the House and the Senate are beefing? They've been doing it all session.
Yeah, when it comes down to it, you can't pass something without both chambers moving it through. And some degree of antagonism between chambers is normal and built into the process. We call it bicameralism if we want to use our fancy political science words. Two chambers in a legislature is so that you do have a second set of eyes that are looking at it. In the Senate, you have less homogenous districts because they represent broader swaths of territory. And so senators tend to have to think a little more broadly. I mean, there's still some pretty homogenous Senate districts in the state, to be clear, but that does shape things a little bit. And then senators have a little bit longer of an electoral leash because they serve twice as long, 4-year terms in the Utah Senate, while representatives have to face the people every 2 years. And so some of those dynamics set up different incentive structures between the House and the Senate. And so some degree of conflict is going to be normal.
There's always been some friendly jabs to the good sponsor between chambers, right? But from your perspective, has the dynamic changed from previous years? And in my head, I wonder, is a change in specifically Senate leadership have anything to do with that?
You've pointed out something that's really important. The tone gets set sometimes by the folks sitting at the head of the table for what the conversation is going to look like. And we did have a substantial change. While President Adams has continued in his leadership role, basically from that point down the rest of the chain in the Senate leadership, we've seen substantial change. And it sometimes takes a little bit of time to adapt to personalities. And change sometimes requires us to try some new things, do things differently. You know, sometimes changes in leadership leads to legislators carrying pieces of legislation that they personally might not even be thrilled to be carrying, but someone has to pick it up and run it if it's a priority for the party. The longtime saying is politics makes for strange bedfellows. And folks who are willing to invest the effort to figure out how to get along with someone, even if it's only for long enough to get a particular piece of legislation that they care about through, are going to be more productive and more successful.
I want to know how a fraught relationship between the chambers impact policy.
When folks can't get along between the two chambers, then policy can't get through. It's that simple. While personality can get in the way of politics and these kinds of things can flare up and cause some grief, it's relatively rare to see that spill over from an interchamber spat on a particular bill or a set of bills, which, as you point out, we've seen in this session, to, okay, we're just going to shut it down and we're not going to pass anything. You know, the fact that you need to be able to go back to the other chamber at some point if you want to get your own pieces of legislation passed. For my part, I worry far more about a legislature that races through things and gets things done super fast without carefully vetting everything than I do about a legislature where the two chambers are trying to get to some point of commonality so that they can get things done.
We've definitely spent a lot of time on the two chambers, right? The House and the Senate. But let's zoom out. If you could narrow it down to 3 words to describe this session, what would it be?
Oh, boy. Oh, that's tough.
Or a sentence, if that's easier.
Interbranch conflict is something that we've seen more of in this cycle. Friction between the judiciary and the legislature has been more pronounced. We've heard a lot of people in the legislature say some degree of conflict between branches of government is normal. James Madison predicted it and even indicated that it was part of the design, that ambition must be made to counteract ambition. But it's not clear how well the counteraction of ambition has played itself out in this session. The governor signaled at times some of his reluctance or hesitation about pieces of legislation. The union bill stands out as one example of that. But ultimately, the governor has signed that. And so, you know, Governor Cox has really stressed the importance of civility in politics and has worked hard to try to model that, I think, in his approach. The tendency to go for a consensus-building collaborative approach has led to the governor's office being much quieter. But there's a sense among some that the improved relationships have come at a cost of not having the governor's office engaged in, you know, more public thumbs up or thumbs down of different pieces of legislation that the legislature's moved through. The appearance to the public in the end is that the governor's office is not as engaged in politics. I don't think that's a fair characterization. They're just trying to do it more diplomatically and in less visible ways.
Do you think this session gives any insight on the direction Utah is headed politically?
In politics in general in the United States, we've seen a little bit of a rightward shift in recent elections. And I think we've seen a rightward shift over the last several election cycles in Utah as well. We've seen some hesitation about some of the aspects of what the first month of Trump's term has looked like with terminations of a lot of federal workers in Utah, what that could mean for Utah's national parks in the future, what that could mean for Hill Air Force Base in the future, what that could mean for jobs, where there's uncertainty with several federal facilities in the state of Utah being identified for potential closure. And some Utah Republican representatives have expressed concern and reservation about some of these kinds of things, the implication it has for their constituents. Others have maybe not waded into those waters, but have expressed support for Donald Trump, at least in his electoral initiatives. And so there's something that remains to be seen about how that tension in the Republican Party that's been a little bit on display in Utah will work out over the next couple of legislative sessions. And I think that'll be something interesting to watch to see what new directions in Republican politics at the state level look like. And I think that's something that has the potential to shape the next several legislative sessions in Utah politics.
That was political scientist Damon Kahn from Utah State University.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear more about how this conflict played out across the different branches of government. Plus, where the biggest bills of the session landed. You're listening to State Street.
Support for State Street comes from the Hinckley Report on PBS Utah. I'm Jason Perry, director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics. The Hinckley Report is Utah's weekly political roundup, bringing together Utah's top journalists, political thinkers, and lawmakers to help you understand how politics impacts your life. Listen to the Hinckley Report wherever you get your podcasts.
State Street is back this spring with another politics-themed trivia night. Join us at Fisher Brewing in Salt Lake City April 10th to put your smarts to the test. We'll have rounds on everything from pop culture to history to, of course, Utah politics. The event is 21+. You can find out more and sign up at KUER.org.
You're listening to State Street. I'm Sean Higgins.
And I'm Sage Miller. We heard from political scientist Damon Kahn about how a simmering government might indicate that the legislature is back to a former playbook. And Governor Spencer Cox agrees. Sean and I spoke to the governor on the last day of the session. He mentioned how, like much of life, things were different before the pandemic.
It will always be challenging. There has never been, nor will there ever be, an easy session where we get everything we want and it's all roses and unicorns. That just never, ever happens. And so I think that's the thing. I don't think this is any more challenging than other sessions. In fact, I would argue it's a pretty normal session, at least normal, maybe pre-COVID, and we're getting back to a normal rhythm. And the normal rhythm is it's very challenging.
And that challenge goes beyond the two chambers, because while all of this drama was playing out mostly behind the scenes, another fight was brewing very publicly between the branches of government.
I want to do a really quick and dirty Civics 101 refresher, because I think it will give us a good foundation before we hear more about this fight. We've got the legislative branch. They make and pass laws. We've got the executive branch. That's Governor Spencer Cox and his crew. They carry out the laws. And then we have the judicial branch. That's the Utah Supreme Court and the justice system. They interpret the laws.
I'm right back in seventh grade civics. Checks and balances, baby.
More like check yourself this year, according to the legislature.
Got him!
They wrote a bunch of laws that would change how the judicial system works. We don't have time here to get into all of them, but the biggest changes would have tinkered with procedure and with how judges are retained on the ballot, adding some pretty heavy-handed legislative oversight and recommendations for who voters should keep on the bench. And all of those people who work in the judicial system, not happy. The Utah Bar Association rallied. The Chief Justice of the Utah Supreme Court hand-delivered a letter to the legislature saying these changes were bad and would inject partisan politics into the court. And Justice Paige Peterson said the quiet part out loud.
It's retribution. It's obviously retribution, and I'm not sure why we're not saying that.
People in the judicial system said this was retaliation for previous court rulings not in the legislature's favor on redistricting and abortion. Lawmakers denied that all of these bills were retribution, but lawmakers did call the court's decision on redistricting one of the worst decisions that has ever come out of the court. Literally called a special session in response to it. In the general session, the two branches of government did come to a tentative truce to not touch judicial retention.
Yet. Through all of this, the executive branch has been kind of off to the side, like that one cousin at a reunion who just wants to stay out of the drama. But, like Damon Kahn said, that neutral stance might be strategic for the governor.
Cox has not vetoed any bills either. Not even the ones he got pressured to veto, like the controversial ban on collective bargaining for public unions. But he did tell us there will be vetoes. We just don't know what those are yet.
It appears the legislature has a lot of ambition to be the most powerful branch of government. The court also has ambition to remain a powerful check on the legislature. And like we heard from Damon Kahn, the whole system was actually designed to work that way. Ambition countering ambition. Before we end, let's quickly come back to some of the biggest bills we've talked about this season on State Street. Close the loop a little bit on what we heard. Let's talk passes and fails. First up,
changes are coming to Utah's vote-by-mail process. Starting in 2029, all registered voters will need to opt in if they want to receive and return their ballot in the mail. They will also have to add the last four digits of a valid ID on their ballot. While lawmakers approved the bill, they gave themselves a long runway to iron out the wrinkles. And boy, are there wrinkles.
Sunshine laws. Senator Mike McKell's bill to get rid of the seven-member state records committee passed the legislature. But he did include changes that addressed several of the concerns we heard from the public. The lawyer who will be in charge of government records appeals can only be fired for cause. That means only if they do something that is obviously really bad. So they're insulated from political influence. And lawmakers added an independent performance evaluation process for the position to create more public transparency in how the office will operate.
Trans dorms. Transgender students attending state colleges or universities will face housing restrictions on campus. They will not be allowed to live in a sex-designated dorm that aligns with their gender identity. They will either have to live in a room that matches their sex assigned at birth, or they will need to request a spot in a gender-neutral dorm. This one passed a while ago, and Cox has already signed it into law.
Immigration. Lots of bills here, but here are two big ones. The bill to increase penalties for some misdemeanors to a full year, which would make it easier to deport some people, passed. But the scope was narrowed to only encompass violent crimes. However, there is still some concern that this could sweep up people who are in the country legally. On the flip side, the bill to eliminate the Children's Health Insurance Program, aka CHIP, did not make it. That means kids without legal status will still be able to get low-cost health insurance.
Public sector unions are no longer allowed to participate in collective bargaining. Firefighters, cops, and teachers were very vocal about their opposition to this. The loudest outcry against a bill I've seen since covering state politics. The governor has signed this into law, although there wasn't enough legislative support for a veto-proof majority. The largest teachers union in the state is leading a referendum campaign to overturn the law. It'll be an uphill battle to land that on the ballot, but they're sure gonna try. Oh, just gonna drop this in real quick, too. There was a push to enshrine Utah as a right-to-work state in the Constitution. There are already laws on the books that say this, but it's a lot easier to change a law than it is the Constitution. However, it failed.
Plus, the biggie. Here's where we landed with the budget. The only thing they're constitutionally required to do. $28.2 billion, which is actually smaller than past years. Federal COVID money is gone, and revenue is slightly down, so lawmakers had to figure out how to do more with less. In that budget, we've got a salary increase for teachers and bonuses for educator support staff, money for Governor Cox's Operation Gigawatt and efforts to further explore nuclear power, plus funding to continue Utah's first-time homebuyer program to the tune of $20 million. The budget goes into effect at the start of the new fiscal year on July 1st.
And as always, we compiled a big ol' list of bills that passed and failed this year. You can find that at KUER.org.
The big wrap-up doesn't cover every single one of those 582 bills. Who would even read that? But it's a lot of the most important ones that could impact your day-to-day. Because, you know, that's what we do here on State Street.
And big thanks to reporters Martha Harris and Macy Lipkin, as well as our intern Elle Crosley for helping us get that wrap-up across the finish line. And don't forget intern Stevie Shaughnessy, who helped cover a ton of bills, too.
582 bills. That's a lot of changes coming to Utah law.
All in a sessions work, Sean. A 45-day sprint that I am blessed is over.
That does it for this episode and this season of State Street. I'm Sean Higgins.
And I'm Sage Miller. State Street is made by a dream team. On digital, we have Eleanor Gomberg, Raquel Davis, and Jim Hill.
Our editing and production team is David Childs and KUER News Director Elaine Clark.
And Caroline Ballard is our executive producer.
If you want to help the show, consider becoming a member of KUER. That's how State Street and all of our reporting is possible. Just go to KUER.org. Sage, sign a die for State Street.
Sign a die. Peace out, folks. Time for a nap.
We are adjourned.
$582. That's a lot of changes coming to Utah law.
582 bills in 64,800 minutes.
From KUER.